Welcome to the Black History Toolkit podcast with Abu Bakr Madan Al-Shabazz. Support the channel by subscribing and also making a donation via Patreon or buy a cup of coffee on Ko-fi. See the links below. You can also find out more by visiting the website abubakrmadan.me.
So now we're going to look at the genetic research or genetic scientific research. And I think this is important because what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at the ways in which people journey. DNA is a fascinating subject, so I thought if I just give a little summary of how to understand it and how we evolved as human beings, etc., we'll have a greater, not just a greater understanding, but a greater appreciation of racialization, in a sense, where people are different. People are idiosyncratic by nature. What I mean by that, they have different attitudes, different behaviors, different outlooks, different thoughts, different feelings, okay? So this is what is important here. So two people are not the same. So Newsweek here, the search for Adam and Eve. This was in the late 1980s. So Dr. Rebecca Kahn of the University of Hawaii conducted a study with Berkeley University looking at mitochondrial DNA. So mitochondrial DNA is a DNA strands that are passed from mother to daughter, mother to daughter. Mothers can pass on to their sons, but their sons cannot pass or transfer those genes on. Okay, it dies in the males. It transfers from female to female. It's called mitochondrial DNA. They had studied over 147 or exactly 147 female samples were taken for this study, different races and different groups, different ethnicities and tribes and clans, etc. And many of them were based in America. So there was 147 different types of women, different phenotypes and morphologies. They used women placentas in order to extract the DNA, because DNA, which is extracted from there is much richer, okay, as far as identifying, analyzing, and evaluating that genetic material. And obviously L1, L2, L3 are nomenclators. These are names given for the genetic branches which they found. And what they found from these 147 women in the late 1980s, that every single one of them were related to one woman that lived in Africa, approximately 90,000 to probably 200,000 years ago. So the cradle of civilization, the cradle of culture is in Africa itself. And most of us know this. Many polygeneticists tried to deny that Africa had any major contribution as far as culture and civilization was concerned. But this is where science blew this out of the water, that the original people on the planet were dark-skinned people or African people. And they existed in East Africa, which is the homeland of humanity. Adam and Eve, you know, they're using a biblical story to tell this, because this is the sort of things they're going to be using. Y chromosomal Adam and mitochondrial Eve. It's just a way of referencing for us to understand where humankind begins. This is how this comes about. So on the topic, mitochondrial Eve, the 147 related to this one woman. And from those genetic materials they extracted from the placentas of these women, they were able to make a facial reconstruction of our mother that lived over 90,000 to approximately 200,000 years ago. She gave birth to her daughter or daughters known as L1, the sand people. The sand people are the oldest people on the planet. They're sometimes referred to as Hottentot. They are Southern Africans. They have yellow to black skin. They're the people that Nelson Mandela is a descendant from. They also got the epicanthic fold, which the Chinese, Japanese, and the Koreans inherited from them. This is what's important here. This distinctive characteristic, phenotype and genotype, as well as morphology, originated in Africa. And what happened, those phenotypes and other forms of genetic material were passed on to different so-called races eventually. So the sand people are the oldest people on the planet, and then eventually they give birth to the Mbuti people, which are Central African or the sub-Saharan African. I don't like the word sub-Saharan because sub is short for subordinate, yeah, or subhuman. You shouldn't use these terms. These are racist terms. I'd rather say West Africa or Saharan Africa. We don't use to put the sub there because there's no European subcontinent. Yeah, they do the same with India, the Indian subcontinent. Why is it black and brown places called sub? And European, which is not even a continent, is called not sub. You know, it's just called Europe. And this is a way of demeaning the people because of the monogenetic theory they wanted to deny for the polygenetic theory. They were polygeneticists. This is what they were. So it was a way of separating the races. So the sun, L1, gives birth to the Mbuti, which is L2, and then L3. Okay, and then this is where the Europeans, the L3 are the Kikuyu people of Kenya. And then we start to see two daughters revolve from them, M and N, and they go to populate the rest of the world. So here is how it goes. So L1, they start off in East Africa. You could move down, settle in Southern Africa. They're the first ones, the oldest people on the planet. Then you've got L2. The Saharan Africans, Central African, Saharan Africans, and L3, which is a later mutation, they emerge and they reside in East Africa, the Kikuyu people in Kenya. And then she gives birth to two daughters. Some of those daughters, M, stay in Africa, but the daughters, N, move out of Africa. Some settle in the so-called Middle East. It's best to call it Arabia, and then they go on to Asia, because Middle East doesn't exist. That's another social construction by the Europeans, okay? It doesn't exist, because it doesn't make sense, the Middle East. There's no Middle West, there's no Middle North, there's no Middle South. And you have to have polarities when we're dealing with things. So if there's no opposite to Middle East, it doesn't exist. It's socially constructed. Europe is not a continent because Europe is Western Asia, okay? Europe is not separate from Asia. It's Western Asia or Northwestern Asia, if you're looking at it from this perspective here. So L1, L2, L3, M stay in Africa. They go out of Africa, M and N. They're still African people. They're still dark-skinned people. This is important now. And then obviously the branches, M and N branches, end up in Australia. They ended up there between 60 to 70,000 years ago, the dark-skinned Australians. They're still dark, living in Asia. There's only one group of people on the planet, which is dark-skinned people. There are different types of phenotypes, okay? Curly hair, straight hair, broad nose, straight nose, but they were dark skin. And this is important because these are equatorial regions, very hot, and you need melanin to shield you from the ultraviolet rays of the sun. It's not about superiority, inferiority. This is about facts to deal with climatic changes and how to cope under those conditions. This is what it's about. It's a protective element. It's not about superiority and inferiority. And you can see all these different branches that come out here. All these branches here, which you find in Europe, which are mutations, these groups are still African. They're still African. However, they are mutating and creating daughters in Europe. This is what's important here. When a lot of people are having these splicings done about DNA, you're so much percentage, this is so much percentage, that. What many Europeans don't know, and not being told, unfortunately, that if you're 34% European, for instance, you're 30% or 34% of that mutation that took place in Europe. But the genetic markers belong to black African people. This is what's important here. They just happen to mutate outside Africa. It took approximately 150,000 years before white or Europeans came on the scene as a cluster group with white skin, straight hair, green eyes, blue eyes. All them are mutations from the original. It's not about superiority, inferiority. It's about climatic changes. I'm going to talk about what takes place and how the Europeans came about. How did lighter skin come about? Because it was a particular period. So all these mutations are black Africans. Some have got curly hair, some got straight hair. So if you look at Australia, for instance, they got black skin, dark, very dark skin, but they got straight hair. You go to places like the Maoris, who were an Afrikoid people. They're dark-skinned people. Many of them mixed somewhat with British invasion from the late 1700s onwards, you know. But generally, they were dark-skinned people with curly-ish straight hair, the Maori people. And you can see that they're African people. They're from the early clusters that migrated with the Australians and beachcombing down till they settled in these places because there was land bridge all over the place and over into the Americas, okay? So let's have a look at the different stages in human development. Most of you did prehistory in school. And one of the things is I'm going to try to familiarize yourself with this, because when prehistory is taught in school, you're not taught that it's an African presence. It's a dark presence in Europe. Okay, white people didn't even exist then. And this is not to take away anything from their contribution over the last 400 to 500 years. This is scientific facts and archaeological evidence, paleoanthropological evidence, paleontological evidence. Okay, anthropology is all substantiating these claims that they came later, their later mutation. So you've got the Upper Paleolithic Age or the Old Stone Age, where you have between 55 and 30,000 years BC. Okay, so these are all dates. I'm not going to run through all of them, but what I want to put your mind to is that during the Upper Paleolithic period, up until 20,000 years ago, all the skulls were dolichocephalic. Dolichocephalic skulls are African skulls or Africoid skulls. They're elongated skulls shaped like bones. These are African skulls. They existed in Europe, in Asia, in Russia, in America, etc., up until 20,000 years. Okay, so when you look at this particular period from 55,000 to about 20,000 years, you know you're dealing with the dark-skinned people. So some of these mutations that took place in Europe are by dark-skinned people. The Stone Age, up until this point, you had dark-skinned people. Okay, then you got the Mesolithic Age, the Middle Stone Age. When you're talking about 700 to 2700 BC, we start to now see the mesocephalic appearance. These are the European type skulls. They're slightly bigger, they're much harder because of the colder climate. It was to stop the brain from freezing. It's not about superiority, inferiority, and bigger brains. Having a bigger skull doesn't mean you've got a bigger brain, okay? You've got a bigger skull in order to deal with those climatic changes, because it was a glaciational period, which I will speak about, which was freezing for approximately 15 to 20,000 years. And that's when the mutation took place of Africans becoming much lighter, nose bridges becoming much narrower. Okay, the hair, which was curly and afro, started to become straighter to protect them from the cold climates of the ice. This is how this comes about. So what you have here, you've got all these different periods. The Neolithic Age, which comes around about 6,000 BC, we start to see the brachycephalic. These are even broader skulls now, much harder skulls of your Mongoloid groups, which is your Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, etc. And you also have your Semitic types, which is a mixture. And what has happened is when groups started to mutate, they started to mix with one another, producing a cluster group of people. It is one human family. Like I said, there's only one race, the human race. We're all mutations of one another from the original, though. And this is what's important here. If you go to Australia, for instance, you'll see Australians who've got black skin, who've got blonde hair, blue and green eyes. So Africans got all of these phenotypes. Even white skin Africans have. Africans are the only people, and the mutation is obvious, because if you look at my hands, it's dark skin, black. All Africans have got lighter skin hands and feet. So something must have happened to make this cover that in those climatic changes in the ice. So this is evidence to show you that one is a mutation. This is a dominant gene. This is recessive. This is how this came about, through epigenesis, the relationship between climate, biology, genes. All this comes together to bring about those changes. Upper Paleolithic Age, an African skull, which was found in the place in Northern Europe. It's probably Austria, Germany, the Agronesian period. Okay, that's what they call it. They got different periods for these eras. And obviously you've got the Venus of Wellendorf. This is an African woman. You've also found similar of these figurines in South Africa. So when those women left as L3 to populate the rest of the world, okay, you see the peppercorn hair, that's Afro hair, there's no doubt about that. The voluptuous bodies, et cetera, you can see that's an African woman. So This was found in Europe. So we know up until about 30,000 years ago, okay, there was only dark-skinned people, okay? They didn't mutate into becoming a so-called European. So this is what's important here when we're looking at dates and we're looking at artifacts, which are facts in art, artifacts, Vaccine Act. So let's have a look at some of the migrations. There's another genetic migration. This was taken from the works of Alice Roberts. Alice Roberts, The Incredible Human Journey, book here. And you can see the similar tracks. This is a footprint tracks now. I show you the genetic tracks. This idea, this says exactly the same thing. So you've got two sciences now determining the out of Africa theory, which is a fact. Then you've got another form of migration, looking at the diffusion of different groups, still African, how they move, the diffusion. Diffusion means movement and then settlement. That's what diffusion means. They leave out of Africa from two exits. They go into the Arabian Peninsula, onto Europe, which is really Western Asia. All that is Asia, okay? The Levant, Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Palestine, etc. You know, you got the Arabian Peninsula, these are the Gulf states. Here you got Mesopotamia or modern day Iraq. They were still African people. So you see that journey of Africans. So they don't become white until thousands of years. If you want to look further of understanding genetic mutation in skin attenuation or pigment, read the works of Nina Jablonski. Nina Jablonski says it takes 20 to 30,000 years, or 20 to 15 rather, thousand years for the mutation to take place. And that's how long the worm interstadial lasted. The worm interstadial was the last major glaciational period where for thousands of years there was ice caps in the northern aspects of the globe. There's a linguistic evidence now. So you haven't got genetic evidence, anthropological evidence. You also got genetic evidence. And you also got historical evidence. So you got four different sciences saying exactly the same thing. You can see where they start in East Africa, okay, L1, L2. This is language diffusion now, language movement. The Semitic language comes out of Africa into the Arabian Peninsula, okay? And you can see the East Africans, the Egyptians, and the Berbers, and the West Africans, all from the same family. They split off different ways. So the ancient Egyptian of the Dascian people, quantum linguistics, the ancient Egyptian language, it's an Afro-Asiatic language. It should be called the African language because that language doesn't really diffuse into Europe or into the Levant or into the Arabian Peninsula. It stayed within the African continent. The Berbers, who are an African group, they come from, so they share the same lineage. They share the same lineage with West Africans. Berbers, the Berbers may be white in your opinion, but they are Germanic people that came in around about the 5th century when the Romans were kicked out. That's when they appear. This is history. And the Egyptians were black, obviously, you can see from that. So what I'm trying to emphasize here is the fact that you still got the out of Africa fact now. I give you four disciplines, all saying the same thing: anthropological, historical, genetic, and linguistic. So let's have a look at this pigmentation. So all I'm trying to say that black people or darker skinned people, when they left Africa to populate the rest of the world, they were still dark skinned. So how does this come about? So one of the things I want to emphasize on this particular point here was that lighter skin came about to create Cro-Magnon. Cro-Magnon is a name they give a European skull, okay, European skull. And how did it change from an African skull? It changed through different forms of phenotypical evolutions based upon the climatic changes. So a lack of sun was one of the first things that attenuated the pigmentation in the skin. When they left and they were caught up in Europe, these Africans, they had to shed some of that skin to deal with the cold climates. Okay, the cold was increased in those climates because the ice was a mile thick. They were locked. They couldn't get back into the equator, these Africans. So they were locked up in the northern part of the equator, you know, the northern part of the globe. The reduction in vitamin D, and because of the simple fact is we need that vitamin D in order to maintain bones, etc. When there's a lack of sun and lack of heat, the bones become brittle, etc. So they had to shed some of that skin to cope with the colder climate in order to produce vitamin D under those conditions. And bodily adaptation was inevitable. According to Stephen Hoppenheimer, he is a geneticist and he's worked with Alice Roberts. She talks about him a lot in her books. She mentions that the first visitors to the north of Europe and Asia probably started their journey looking very dark skinned and evolved to become paler later. Stephen Oppenheimer is a white person geneticist who has no problem with that. White people are mutations from darker skinned people. This is not about superiority, inferiority. It's about genetic facts, and we all belong to one family, the human family, one race, the human race. Nicholas Wade, another geneticist, journalist, he says the first human beings who migrated out of Africa almost certainly had dark skin. So when you look at the genetic markers are found in Asia and all these places, and people are assuming they look like the people today, they don't understand history. And the fact is that what this actually tells us is that something happened in order for the phenotypical traits to change into what we would now consider particular so-called racial groups. Here's a glaciational period. So Africans left Africa approximately 70,000 years ago. They ended up coming out of Africa and migrating to all these places, beachcombing into, and they inherited all these places here. And what happened was there was a term known as a worm interstadial, the last glaciation, ice caps at the top. The Africans were locked here, no sun, no heat. And what started happening then, they had to go for those albinism. Africans started producing albino children. If you want us to read more on this, read African Present Early Europe and look at the works of Charles Finch, who's a scientist. He breaks this down. You know, and he talks about torresinase plus and torresinase minus, etc., and how those mutation takes place, how the depigmentation process happens under these climates as far as mutation is concerned. But this is how this really and truly comes about. So the emphasis here is for you to understand is that when Africans left, they were living, they settled, migrated, started building small industries, etc. And then something happened in order to bring about that change. So the worm interstadial is the last glaciational period, and it lasted for approximately 20,000 years, 15 to 20,000 years. And that's when the mutation took place. Africans left approximately 70,000 years. They actually ended up in Europe probably about 50 to 55,000 years ago. They're still African. The Australian Aborigines had come here around about 60,000 years. It took them 10,000 years approximately to settle here, to journey to settle here. This is important news. So what happens then later on? Around about 50 to 55,000 years ago, Africans are there, they're caught up in the ice. So between 50,000 years to approximately 30,000 years, is the worm interstadial. And that's when the mutation story takes place. So it's after between 30 to 20,000 years, we now see Cro-Magnon man or European man, European woman, as we know them today. So as a cluster group, as a genetic group, if we want to use this term, Europeans are only 20,000 years old, maybe 30 tops. Africans can go back at least 90,000 to 200, 1,000 years ago, according to genetic evidence done by Rebecca Cannon and her team, and later geneticists such as Stephen Oppenheimer, you know, Alice Roberts, and other geneticists are mentioning this. So this is what's important here, how people started to mutate. So this proves of the monogenetic fact, mono meaning one or single gene. This is what monogenetic means, a single gene. Poly means many. You don't come from many genes, you come from one single gene. But only one race, one human race, one family, one human family. This was a skull which was found. It's an African skull, dolichocephalic, platyrrhine, wide nasal passages. And you've got prognathism, where the jaw comes out. This is the oldest bone which is found in Europe, 50 to 55,000 years old. It's been recorded. You have a similar skull found in Africa. You can see very little changes is taking place. You can still see the prognathism, the platyrrhine, the wide nasal passages, and you can also see the dolichocephalic, the boat-shaped skull, where the skull comes out. These are typical African skulls. This is a modern African. So this is found in Europe, 50 to 50. So we know who lived in Europe. So when you've got these genetic markers, which make up maybe 34% of your so-called DNA through this splicing that genetic companies and organizations like to do, they're not telling you that the genetic mutation that you have, which is in Europe, was of a dark-skinned African female. If we're looking at mitochondrial DNA, if it's Y chromosomal material, we're dealing with a dark-skinned man. These are scientific facts. So many people are paying thousands of pounds to prove with their DNA to move away from the African gene, not knowing that the early mutations they're talking about, around about this period and later, right up until maybe between 30 to 20,000 years, were African. And from 25 to 20,000 years, you're talking of Europeans. That's when they come as a cluster group. The Oriental groups with the yellow skin, the epicanthic fold and the short frame figure, they don't even come until about 15,000 years. This is important here. So we know from genetic evidence, we also know from archaeological evidence, from excavations which has been done, from paleontology, paleoanthropology, anthropology, and other forms of sciences, they're all linked saying the same thing. This is what's important here. Culture to civilization. Primitive, evolution, diffusion, autochthonous, which means indigenous, allochthonous means migrant people that settled in the place, native, and culture. So primitive comes from the word prime, which means first or best. It doesn't necessarily mean primitive, which means backward and savage. This is historical understanding to primitive. Primitive means comes from prime, which means first or best. Cultural evolution is where it begins. So when the genetic material begins, it begins in East Africa. Evolution, cultural evolution, or genetic evolution, where it begins. Diffusion means where it spreads. Autochthonous means the first settlers ever on that land. It means the indigenous. Indigenous means the first people. Indigenous is not the same as native. Every indigenous is a native. Not all natives are indigenous. I'm a native of this country. It means I was born in this country. I'm a native of this country. But does it mean that I am the original? I am the indigenous? No, I'm not the original. That's the difference. A lot of people confuse native as being indigenous, and this is not true. And if you look at genetic evidence, this is what is blowing this out of the water. History has literally had to change in Europe because of what DNA has done. It's really disturbed historiography, historicity, to a large extent, genetics, because of what took place from the 1500s right up until colonization. 450 to 500 year period of falsification of history, to distort history, to destroy history, to suppress, to falsify, in order to intentionally confuse. This is what it's about. So this is what is happening now. Allochthonous are the groups of people that move into an area, which means that allochthonous people, migrant settlers, mean that there's people which preceded them there. They're either native or indigenous. And there are three types of things you understand from a historical perspective. It's isolation. Isolation, the people, the first people to live in that country, and they don't mix with other people. Isolation, then you got migration. From isolation, you got migration, where people move in. Then you have miscegenation. Miscegenation, where the races mix together. And this is what has been happening for over 90,000 years, where different groups of people have mixed with each other from different tribes and clans and so-called races, if you want to call it races at the time, because there was no races until really, if you look at it from that perspective, at least 20,000 years ago, we saw two. European African, if you want to look at our Indo-European African, whatever the case may be. And then obviously the later ones were the mixtures between those two, which are your Semitic groups, which are your brachycephalic groups. These are your Mongoloids, your Chinese, your Japanese. They come much later, okay? They come as a strong group to inherit that part of the world by taking over the Daskin populations of China and India and Indonesia and Malaysia. There were Daskin people living there. About 15,000 years, the yellow-skinned people with shorter stature, they started to become numerous and they took over those lands. This is what happened. So you've got allochthonous people, people who move in. Native, I've already explained to you, and culture deals with five or six principles, maybe seven principles. The first one is language, communication. That's what culture is. Verbal and non-verbal form of communication. Then a belief system, morals, customs, norms, values, and mores. There are seven basic things to culture. So if you remember that, you will know, understand culture, because everyone has a culture, whether they're high culture, low culture, sophisticated culture, primitive culture, everyone, because culture is about action. That's what culture is about. It's about action. As John G. Jackson in his book, Introduction to African Civilization, states, the culture is based upon what? Culture is based upon a pattern behavior. That's what culture is. And that pattern behavior is, how do you pattern your behavior through communication? Verbal, non-verbal form of communication. What is your belief system? Belief system doesn't mean, if you, even if you're non-religious, you still have a belief. It may not be faith-based, but it's still a belief, nevertheless. So this is what's important. You've got morals, values, etc. These are socially constructed in order to harmonize and bring balance to a community, balance to a society. This is what happens. And all cultures do this in order to stabilize, not just the economy, stabilize the family structure, which, by the way, is the oldest institution known to man and woman, or to humankind. That's the oldest institution. There's no institution older than the family. This is looking at, in several instances in the Bible, however, Cush seems to refer to the location not in Africa. So Cush, which was from Africa, okay, you can call them East Africans today. You got Cush there. Okay, this is the names of ancient, that's the names of those groups in ancient times. You can see they're in Arabia. So when we look at Ham, Shem, and Japheth, the story from the biblical text, they start them off here and then they fuse back in here. Okay, but they come at a much later date. So this thing where they have diffusion coming from Mesopotamia or Iraq back in, okay, it actually shows that those particular so-called racial groups are pretty accurate in its form of diffusion. Diffusion came back the other way. Okay, people started, settled, high culture was developed, and it came back into other regions again to mix with those people who were there, the autochthonous groups. In Mesopotamia, which means that the first civilization was Sumeria, and the earliest civilization was Cush / Egypt or Kemet. So you have the earliest civilization with Dark-skinned people. So these are the oldest civilizations known. So you have Ham, Shem, and Japheth. This is Ham. Ham is supposed to be the father of the dark races. Okay. So Mizraim is Egypt. That was one of his sons. He settles in East Africa. Punt, there's still a difference of opinion where Punt is Libya or Somalia, but the reality is that it's still in Africa. Cush is East Africa, Sudan, Ethiopia, Djibouti, Eritrea, and all those places right up into Kenya. We also got Cush in Arabia. We also have Cush in where? Mesopotamia, where the Sumerians are. This is important here. And Canaan is Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Palestine. So we know the dark-skinned people, they're finding dolichocephalic skulls in the Tufians of the Levant. They are now associated closely with the Nubian people or the dark-skinned people of Sudan. So we know that they adventured out thousands of years ago and settled in those regions, etc. And this is how people start to develop. Now, how do you develop a civilization? Civilization, you have to have certain characteristics, certain behavioral patterns. You need to have an intelligentsia. You need to have doctors, medical doctors. You need to have scientists, you need to have educators, you need to have priests. This is the intelligentsia. The next thing in order to create a high culture, which is a civilization, is metallurgical skills. You need to have knowledge of tools to create things to make it easier for yourself, such as a knife. You move from flint to a metal instrument to cut things or to slaughter things. Okay, this is what happens. So people move from stone to metal. And this is how it happens. And when you come into the metal age, the metallurgical stage, you now start to see high structures being developed, high structures being built, and basically legal systems started to emerge as a result of that, you know, with values and customary practices, etc. This is how it comes. This is cultural evolution, where it begins. Cultural diffusion is where it spreads. That's the difference between evolution in history and diffusion. Diffusion is spreading, you know, to bring about influence. So here, who are the people of Sumer and the Sumerians? This is where we get the word Sumer from, okay? Ranulf Rashid, he was a historian who specializes in the African presence in antiquity. This is what he says. While Sumerians or Sumer's many cultural achievements are much celebrated, the important question of their ethnic composition is frequently glossed over or left out of discussion, which means that Sumeriologists do not want to acknowledge the Black presence of one of the first or the oldest civilizations known in the world. They want to attribute it to other people who weren't even around at that time. This is what's important here. Sumer and Cush. I'm on a map where Sumerian is, and where Cush was, where the family of Cush, the tribes of Cush went. It wasn't just in East Africa. They were in southern Arabia. They were also in what is known as Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iraq. And it says here, these Sumerians, okay, or Ethiopians. Ethiopian, the word Ethiopia comes from a Greek word, which means what? Burnt face. Ops means face in Greece. Ethiopia means burnt, blackened, darkened. That's what it means, okay? So Sumerians and Ethiopians and their kindred appear to have settled, okay, along tracks from Mesopotamia to India. So when we look at those early civilizations, Sumer and Babylon, okay, Assyria and all those places up in Mesopotamia, we even have in India, Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa, okay? They're the black civilizations that emerged at that time. So the earliest civilizations, high culture, was developed by darker-skinned people. And this is why it's important for us to know this, because Europeans didn't go through, because Africans for approximately 150,000 years had time to develop themselves, get into the metallurgical industries, to develop clothes, you know, and to start selling and trading, you know, commercial enterprises, you know, commodity exchange with minerals, you know, and other forms of resources. This is how it comes about. So when we look at that, and it also goes on to say that this area now includes southern Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and northwest India. This was lived by dark-skinned people for thousands of years. The lighter-skinned people you see in these places now have only been there approximately, 3,000, maybe 4,000 years. And we know when they came in, because the oral traditions that they have with the Aryans coming in from the Caucasus Mountains into the equatorial regions like Mesopotamia, Afghanistan, Persia, all these were black lands. And when they came in at a much later date, they came around about 150 BC to about 70 BC. So, and the skulls actually substantiate this as well. We don't see these skulls of different groups of people coming into those regions until much later. The elder civilization of the region was established by the Assyrians. They are designating the Assyrio-Babylonian inscriptions as the black heads or the black-faced people. Ethiopia means black face, okay? Sumeria, Ethiopia, the same people. They're Cushitic people, okay? It's an adjective, it's a descriptive word. This is how this comes about. And then obviously you've got the likes of Nama. Nama is the person, he's Cushitic, he's what you call Ethiopian or Sudanese. He was the one that unites the two lands of Upper and Lower Kemet, which we now call Egypt, okay? And he builds the kingdom. You can see his face, wide nostrils, his thick lip, is an African. He is the founder of what we now know as the first dynasty. Egypt went to either 30 or 33 dynasties, depending on your interpretation. Then we got Kemetic people. What do they say? This is the papyrus of Hunefa. We came from the beginning of the Nile, where God happy dwell at the foothill of the mountain of the moon, Mount Kilimanjaro. That's where the Egyptians said they come from. So when we go back to genetic evidence, I show you how the Egyptians moved, the Berbers moved, from the linguistic and other West Africa, the Chaldaic languages got into Central and West Africa. Egypt, they migrated. So the linguistic evidence substantiates what the Egyptians themselves say in their papyrus. So the Egyptians are not white as people would like to make out. They came white later on with invasions, with allochthonous groups coming in and settling, but it didn't bring much in the way of contribution. If you look at it, because that was a high civilization, they absorbed that and they maintained that and preserved that. They didn't bring in anything, okay? This is what's important here if we look at ancient Egyptian civilization, because the first group of invaders that come into Africa was the Hyksos approximately 1650 BC. And then the Assyrians, who were light-skinned people, Indo-Europeans who were living in places like Mesopotamia spread, they came in around about 662 to 663. Then the Persians came in, the Cambyses, around about 525. Then Alexander of Macedonia comes in approximately 332 BC. The Romans then come in later on, so you see how it gets lighter, and they become the ruling class, but there's still a dark population there. They may not be in the seats of power, but their systems is now being absorbed, being used by these interlopers or allochthonous groups of people who've migrated. Okay, this is what's important. So the Egyptians saying it came from the south, from the southern part of Africa to the eastern part. This is what they're basically saying. So this is how they would have journeyed. Kenya is a bit further down. This is how they diffused, okay? And they became the first settlers. There are lots of groups of people, but they diffused from East Africa. Diffusion, they spread, and then they settled. But they were the autochthonous, or the indigenous people. The Greco-Roman, they are autochthonous. They come in much later. They may be native, but they're not indigenous. And this is how you understand this. This is Imhotep, you know? So I think I've gone through enough presentations just to give you an idea of genetics and how it mixes with history and anthropology and craniology and paleoanthropology, and the list just goes on and on. I hope you've enjoyed the presentation. I hope I've clarified some misconceptions.